the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Open lines this hour. In next hour, all the makings of a Coast to Coast classic. Next hour, the incredible moon theories of John Lear, noted pilot. A little bit later on in the evening, for a brief moment, a brief hour, Richard C. Hoagland will join us. Some of John's work has been influenced because of Richard C. Hoagland. We're going to talk about structures on the moon. And then we'll take your phone calls at the end of tonight's program. And by the way, you might want to get up to the coasttocoastam.com website. John has sent us about 20 pictures of structures on the moon, buildings that he claims are there. Some of them will make you look twice, maybe even three times. You can see roads on some of them. Some of the other ones, John, I'll tell you what I think they are a little bit later on when you're on the air with us. But go take a look at them. They're on the coasttocoastam.com website under the feature article. And take a poke at that. It's fascinating material because tonight has all the makings of one of those classic coast-to-coast shows.
In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Famed remote viewer Ingo Swann saw structures on the far side of the moon. Richard C. Hoagland, who will join us next hour, sees structures on the moon. John Lear, our special guest tonight, sees structures on the moon. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, this is going to be one of those programs where even if I wasn't hosting this show, I'd be glued to the radio. John Lear is a retired airline captain, former CIA pilot, as well as the son of the very famous inventor of the Lear jet. He's a Lockheed L-1011 captain, highly regarded in aviation circles. He has flown more than 150 test aircraft. He has won every award granted by the Federal Aviation Administration, and he holds 18 world speed records. He's worked for 28 different aircraft corporations, and during the late 1980s and early 1990s, John began coming forward with startling revelations concerning the subject of aerial phenomena and unidentified flying objects. He's our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Hello, John. How are you?
Good evening, George. It's an honor to be on your show again, and pleasure. I think you are the best radio show host, bar none.
Well,
I wanted to tell you I enjoyed our time together at the Bay Area UFO Conference, and I'm sorry we didn't get to spend more time.
I got to tell you, it is a delight for me after so many years to interview guests like you, like Richard, and then when I meet you for the first time, it's really a treat for me. I mean, I never get over it. I'm still like a kid when I meet my very favorite baseball player when I was a little guy. It's the same kind of feeling, John, so it was great being with you, too.
That's great, and I want to say hello to Bad Boy, the Nighthawk Zone, Spike Mike of Fantastic Forum, and my buddies at AboveTopSecret.com, which are Springer and Skeptic Overlord and Simon Gray, who have helped me put this program together, and my associates Ron Schmidt and in Las Vegas and Beth in Florida.
Great. And I want to remind everyone, John has sent us some pictures, which are up on the coasttocoastam.com website. We're going to make some reference to them throughout the night. Get up there when you get a moment and just start taking a look at them. You know, John, your credentials are absolutely incredible. And the fact that you have been able to investigate and talk about some of these fantastic things that are happening on this planet and in this universe just adds so much credibility to it. There aren't a lot of people like you who come forward that you stick your neck out and say, hey, look, this is what's going on. But I'm beginning to feel like people with credentials like yours are beginning to do that now. Am I right in that feeling?
Yeah, most of the guys that know what's going on are hampered by their security clearance. But tonight I'd like to talk about how the government has been mining on the moon for the past 40 years and how the public, Congress, and most everyone else have been kept out of the loop. How Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, Space Lab, the shuttle and the International Space Station are all cover for what's really going on. As a matter of fact, we first started sending men to the moon in 1962. We were going to Mars in 1966 and have traveled throughout the solar system since then. And tonight, I'm going to show you the photographs taken by NASA themselves that will show mining operations currently on in operation. And these are not artifacts of ancient civilizations on the moon. This is going on here and now.
Why covert, John? Why not just announce to the public, hey, we're on the moon, we're mining, we're getting minerals, we're doing all these things?
Yeah, that's what I want the listeners to email Michael Griffin, who's head of NASA, and ask him, why is this a secret?
Yeah, so we really don't know what's going on, do we?
No.
John, let's go back just a little bit before we get into this. Tell me about your interest in the aerial phenomena, the unidentified flying objects, something obviously captured your imagination and your attention.
It was Bud Hopkins' book, Missing Time. I remember picking it up off the table at a friend of mine, Al Newell, here in Las Vegas, and I looked at that thing and I said, what's this? And I started reading it, and George, I'm telling you, the shivers went up my spine. I said, this is real. And one thing led to another. I eventually got to meet Bud in New York, and it was kind of funny because I was flying for American Transair, and I was so anxious to meet him that I had just come over from a flight from Paris. I had all my bags and my, you know, my bag and my flight bag and my hang-up bag, and I went directly to Bud Hopkins' house, and I rang the doorbell, and when he answered it, he was in a kind of looked shocked. He thought I was moving in, and all I did is, you know, I had my stuff from the flight. And so anyway, we hit it off good, and he tried to do a regression. He said, look, you can't have this interest without, you know, having been involved, and nothing came of it, but that's what started it, Bud Hopkins' book, Missing Time.
You took a little hiatus for a while, and now you're coming back strong again.
Yeah, I had a little time there when I thought that maybe I shouldn't be talking about this, but fortunately that passed, and now I'm back.
All right. Well, do you still get calls from some of your friends and colleagues who have flown, and do they still pass information on to you?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the airline I left, which was not ATA, a couple of months ago, had a funny thing. The flight engineer called me. He said, you're not going to believe this. He said, they were in a 747 headed towards Seattle from back east, and they were over Chicago. It was at night, late at night, and they're headed westbound, and the center comes on and says, traffic 12 o'clock, 20 miles, 2,000 feet below you. And so they're looking out for this traffic below them, and here comes this huge white object, and it comes almost to within a mile of their craft, and then just instantaneously heads for the north and disappears in about 5 seconds. And they're all sitting there stunned, and the co-pilot finally says, now there's something you don't see every day. And, of course, they all burst out laughing.
Tell me a little bit about some of these photos that you gave us that we have posted on the website.
Okay, we have the photos starting with Apollo 8-12, 2209. It shows a picture of the Lomonosov crater, and what it shows is a city. And I'll tell you how I got into this. A few years ago, somebody sent me some pictures by Art Sweeney, who did drawings of stuff on the moon
right.
that he could see through a telescope. And that put me into a friend who called me Bob Chirilla in Chicago, and he said, when you're in town, I want to show you something. And he showed me a book written by a guy named Charrington in Canada, who had a really good photograph of Lunar Orbiter 2162, and that was an oblique photo of Copernicus. And he showed me some tanks, vertical, you know, tanks, four huge ones standing up on the hillside, and that's posted in the pictures you got. That led me, about the same time, I saw Richard Hoagland's Moon-Mars connection about the six-mile-high object in the middle of Sinus Medi.
Right.
And so I ordered some photos from NASA of these pictures of Copernicus. Here's the deal, Jordan. Here's how it got so interesting. Somebody, now when you order pictures from NASA, you don't ordered from them. You ordered from National Space Science Data Center, one of the mm-hmm. contractors. Somebody sent me, and I'll never know who it was, a 16 by 20 negative of 162H, Lunar Orbiter 2, oblique photo of Copernicus, which had not been airbrushed at all. Uh-huh. And that stuff is, anybody can look at it. It's at abovetopsecret.com. You can go to that website and see that thing. What happened is I had no way to print a 16 by 20 negative. So that thing sat in my garage for 2 or 3 years until the technology got to the point where I could go to go downtown mm-hmm. and get somebody to print it. When I did, it was spectacularly clear. I took it over to Bob Lazar's, and it was so big that he had to make 4 different scans of it, and those are on abovetopsecret.com. And we started looking at it, and it was just really interesting. Those photos sat around for maybe 2 or 3 years, and then finally I went to abovetopsecret.com, and they wanted to put them on their forum, which they did. And it attracted so much interest. I think that one forum now, that one thread has got over 130,000 views now. And people started to contribute. Yeah, I see this, I see that. And we just amassed all these things that were going on Copernicus. It's obviously a mining operation. You can look at the photos that I gave to Lex that are posted on C2C. Mm-hmm. You can see cranes. You can see excavators. You can see buildings. It's all there. And then a few weeks ago, actually, it was around my birthday, I got to thinking, geez, I wonder if there's anything else. And I pulled out a book out of my library, and I went to that great book place in Portland a few years ago and cleaned them out of every NASA book they had. And a lot of them were printed way back in the 70s, which is before NASA got real talented with their airbrush. And I got this book called SP-246, and it's photos of Apollo 8, 10, and 11. It was published in 1971, and this just happened like in December. I started putting these photos on the scanner and looking at them, and it was just amazing. There is a city. I mean, there's a spaceport, what looks like a spaceport. There's tubes, there's roads, there's vegetation, there's lights. I mean, it's all right there. So I sent this one clip or this one photo of 2209 to Beth and Ron, and they looked at it, and they said, this is absolutely amazing. So from there, I started clipping more photos, and we found more and more stuff, and that's how it all happened. And those photos are the ones that you have on your website.
How do we know, John, if these mining operations are ours and not extraterrestrial events?
I'm sure they're part extraterrestrial. We couldn't have possibly put that massive a mining operation together in 40 years. I mean, we could have. I don't think we did. Somebody else is up there. Somebody else built all those buildings. There's no possible way we could have done that.
You think we just kind of inherited them?
Yeah, I think we work with them up there. Now, I don't know who that is up there, but they're the ones that built all that, and we're doing mining. Now, the reason I know that we're involved is several years ago, I ran into a real honest-to-gosh government insider. He's dead now, but he told me 3 things, and one was that we had been going to the moon since 1962, that the population of Mars was 600 million, and they looked just like us. And the other thing was that he had worked on a piece of mining equipment that was to go to the moon. He said, John, he said, we built this thing down in Alabama, way out in the nowhere. He said, it was so enormous. He said, when we finished the project, he said, I actually rented a little airplane. He said, I'm a private pilot, and flew around this piece of equipment just to get an idea of how big it was. And I said, gee, that's fantastic. How did they get it to the moon?
Yeah.
He said, I don't know. And that's, you know, the deal in compartmentalization. You get to know a little bit of the program, but you don't get to know the whole thing. So he knew a little bit, but he didn't know the whole thing.
What an incredible...
Now, if you ask where the operations are from now and how they keep them so secret, I think it's Antarctica. And if anybody wants to check Google search words, I recommend 2 things. One is moon mining. You're going to be absolutely stunned at how much there is. I think there's 1,500,000 hits on moon mining and Space Law and Clementine. Just Google those things and see how much there is.
A couple of these pictures you sent us, specifically the crater Kepler, and then you look at the airbrushed version. It looks like two different craters.
Absolutely.
I mean, the structures are all gone.
Yeah, like I said, NASA didn't get proficient with their airbrush till about 1972-73, and they went back and got all these pictures. But those of us who got the early pictures have the good stuff. And on Kepler, you'll see the Lunar Orbiter 3-162 picture. I mean, there's obviously stuff on that crater. There's obviously a strip mine there. There's obviously buildings there. And then you go to the Apollo 12 photo that was taken several years later, and it's absolutely clean. There isn't a trace of anything.
Well, they came down and took all the equipment away. But yeah. You're right. It is absolutely incredible. Now, how do you know, though, in some cases, we're not looking at, tricks of light or just different images when you look at this?
Well, take a look at it yourself. I mean, there's buildings on the rim, and then there's not buildings there. Some of the pictures are great. As a matter of fact, did you see the one of the of Aristarchus? You know, we're always told that Aristarchus is the brightest spot on the moon. We can see it. And any image you can buy or purchase or moon pictures, it's always just a white blob. And so we had a guy take a 10-inch telescope and take a picture for us, and you can see it right in those pictures that we've got on your website. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful structure, and it looks exactly like a nuclear reactor to me. It's probably a fission reactor. There's no doubt about it. You can see the arches. You can see the blue glow. And the blue glow comes from when radiation hits molecules of air. And now you're going to say, wait a minute, there's no air on the moon. Well, as a matter of fact, the moon has a breathable atmosphere, and it has gravity 65% of what's on Earth. So, you know, it has all of that.
And it looks like it's got some arches alongside of it.
Yeah. And then you look at the next picture, I think that Lex got it up there. Look at that picture that Clementine
took
in 1994. Right, can you imagine that we got a better picture of Aristarchus from a 10-inch telescope than Clementine did with a $100 million satellite? Yeah. That's great. I love it.
It doesn't make any sense at all, does it?
It doesn't.
So all this has been going on, you think, right under our noses for 40 years, John?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, somebody pulled up some stuff off the internet that my father was involved in the middle 50s with Antigrav. And there's a lot of stuff. If you Google Bill Lear or William Powell Lear, Antigrav, he was there doing it. He was right in the middle of it. As a matter of fact, there's a 3-minute clip floating around that was originally in David Hatcher Childress video of my dad lecturing on UFOs at the Bonston Laboratories. And he's there at a blackboard. He's got a saucer there drawn on, and he's describing how it works. The film is silent, but you can see generally what he's doing. Interspaced with the pictures of him are technicians working in laboratories with balsa wood and paper UFOs. They're obviously trying to make, you know, what was the beginning of our efforts. I think that all came to a culmination in 1959. We made the craft. We may have had some help, but anyway, our first trip to the moon in Antigrav was 1962. Now, let me tell you this. And you say, well, Antigrav, we don't hear very much about it. And I say, that's right. You don't hear one word about it. You don't see Aviation Week and Space Technology putting, you know, we're working on Antigrav and here's the experiments. Nothing. Not one single word. And the reason is they already perfected it and they don't want anybody talking about it.
I want to get your reaction, Sean, about this talk about why we never technically went back to the moon. Why did it seem to end publicly, yet we continued going back then?
We were already there. That was all a cover. those guys, you know, the Apollo astronauts, the first guys to set on, they weren't the first guys. That was all just a cover program so that nobody would know about the real program. Now, why they wanted to keep the real program a secret, I don't know. But you can ask, you know, if the listeners want to email Michael Griffin, NASA administrator, they're welcome to do so and say, hey, how come this way, you know, John Lear's got some pretty good evidence here that that we're already on the moon and we're mining up there. What's the deal? You should know. You're the administrator.
What are they mining for, John?
That is a good question. What we think that they're mining for is helium-3. And helium-3 would be an excellent power source if we can get fusion together.
That could power the planet for years.
Yes.
Stay with us, John. We'll be back with you in just a moment on coasttocoastam.com. Our special guest tonight, John Lear. And again, if you have a computer, I hope you do by now, get up to the coasttocoastam.com website, look at the assortment of photographs he has sent us. Take a look at them, see what you see. We'll be back.